Okay, so you can repeat. Yada. When.
When.
Rede. In the battlefield. Korava. The party of Dhritarashtra. Shrinjayanam. Of the party of the Pandavas. Vireshu.
Of the warriors.
Ato. Thus. Viragatim.
The destination deserved.
By the warriors. Gateshu. Being obtained. Vrikodara. Bhima, the second Pandava. Avida. Beaten. Gada. By the club. Abhimarsha. Lamenting. Bhagna. Broken. Urudande. Spinal cord. Dhritarashtraputre, the son of King Dhritarashtra. Bhartuhu, of the master. Priyam, pleasing. Dronahi, the son of Dronacharya. Iti, thus. Sma, shall be. Pashyan, seen. Krishna, Draupadi. Sutanam, of the sons. Swapat. Tam, while sleeping. Shiramsi, heads. Upaharat, delivered as a prize. Vipriyam, pleasing. Eva, like. Tasha, his. Jagupshitam, most heinous. Karma, act. Vigarhayanti, disapproving. Translation, when the respective warriors of both camps, namely the Kauravas and the Pandavas, were killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and the dead warriors obtained their deserved destinations, and when the son of Dhritarashtra fell down lamenting, his spine broken, being beaten by the club of Bhimasena, the son of Dronacharya, Ashwatthama beheaded the five sleeping sons of Draupadi and delivered them as a prize to his master, foolishly thinking that he would be pleased. Duryodhana, however, disapproved of the heinous act, and he was not pleased in the least. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Transcendental topics of the activities of Lord Sri Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam begin from the end of the battle of Kurukshetra, where the Lord himself spoke about himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, both the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are transcendental topics of Lord Krishna. The Gita is Krishna Katha, or topics of Krishna, because it is spoken by the Lord. And the Bhagavatam is also Krishna Katha, because it is spoken about the Lord. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted everyone to be informed of both Krishna Katas by his order. Lord Krishna Chaitanya is Krishna himself in the garb of a devotee of Krishna, and therefore the versions of both Lord Krishna and Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are identical. Lord Chaitanya desired that all who are born in India seriously understand such Krishna Katas, and then after full realization, preach the transcendental message to everyone in all parts of the world. That will bring about the desired peace and prosperity of the stricken world. So, Om Gana Timurandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, the story that's being related here is actually a very famous story. You know, after the battlefield, battle of Kurukshetra, Duryodhana was completely depressed. And so he went and started meditating or resting in a lake. You all know the story. He was under the water. And these kshatriyas, they actually had great potency and power. In other words, they had mystic powers, basically. Their weapons were called by different mantras, like the Brahmastra weapon, which is more powerful than the atomic weapon and more focused than the atomic weapon. So he had the power. He could meditate under the water. He could just hold his breath. And the Pandavas were looking all over for him because they understood that without killing Duryodhana, the battle was not finished, even though everybody was dead, practically speaking. So many people were dead. And some versions it says 640 million, other versions say 6 million, but anyway, it was a lot of people, whatever it was. So they finally found him, and they challenged him. They challenged him, you know, you coward, what are you doing escaping from us? And Krishna was with them at that particular juncture, and Duryodhana jumped out of the water, basically. And they said, all right, this can be the final battle. And Yudhisthira said something that was not very much appreciated by the other Pandavas. He said, you know, whoever wins this battle wins the whole war. And they said to Yudhisthira, you know, we've been fighting so much, and you're just letting everything depend on this one battle between two people? You know, this is not... So anyway, they went along because Yudhisthira was the elder brother. And so they automatically had to follow what Yudhisthira wanted. And so they said to Duryodhana, you can pick anyone you want to fight with. And so Duryodhana, you know, being a Kshatriya and martial spirit, he didn't want to pick someone he could defeat easily. Because the Kshatriyas, they actually enjoyed fighting. It wasn't simply like the modern-day soldiers who were mostly cowards, and not, like Prabhupada commented on during the Vietnam War, that they were inducting, or what's called drafting people into the army. In other words, you were forced to go. If you were 18 years old, you had to sign up for the draft. I remember that time. I was around that age. And first they allowed people going to the university to not be drafted. I like that, because I was going to the university. But then they wanted to take everybody. And so people were running away to Canada to escape from the draft. And finally they had this thing called the lottery, where they picked different birthdays. And according to your birthday, they had it was like a cage with little balls with different days of the year in it. Like it would say, November 16th. That was number one, and it was on TV, and they were picking this. Anyway, they were picking the different numbers like that, and if your name was picked, and your number of your birthday, you know, let's say if you're born on November 16th, you were the first to go. So I mean, the whole country was watching television like that as they were rolling this little cage around with these balls in it. Okay, November 16th. I was watching too. And I was just praying to Krishna, oh my God, don't let my number be called. You know, and then Krishna reciprocated. My number was 359. That means they have to call everybody practically in the whole country, because the highest number would be 365, obviously, or 366. It wasn't a leap year, but I mean 365. So it was just about at the very top, or the last people would be called. I mean, if they'd called me, there wouldn't be any men left in the country. And that was before they had women fighting. You know, now the ladies fight, they have an equal right to fight. In fact, in some countries, the ladies are in the majority of the military, like in Israel. They're actually the fiercest fighters. So we believe the ladies should fight too. So, no, not really. According to the Vedic system, the ladies would stay home and the men would fight. And anyway, the Kshatriyas, they had... But the point is that they were inducting or drafting people who really didn't have the psychology of fighters. So when they sent people to Vietnam, many of them just smoked marijuana. You know, they were smoking marijuana, and then... Because in Vietnam, it grows everywhere. And they were just watching the bullets go. Isn't this nice? Mm-hmm. It's just like fireworks. You know? Unfortunately, sometimes the fireworks hit them, you know. But it shows when people are not actually Kshatriyas and they send them to the battlefield. Prabhupada commented on that. He says they're Shudras or less or whatever. And so either they ran away or they just like went crazy. But Duryodhana was Kshatriya. You know, he wanted a good fight. He wasn't thinking, let me just defeat the person who I can defeat. You know, because there was this martial spirit. It would have been embarrassing for him to fight like Sahadeva or Nakula or someone like that. So, naturally, he chose Bhimsen. Bhimsen here is referred to in this verse as Vrikodhara, which means the person who has a wolf belly. Because he was, Prabhupada said, a voracious eater. And when the Pandavas would take prasad, they would give half to Bhimsen, and the other half would go to everybody else. So he was... And also, the final pastimes, when he left his body, it's described he left his body because he ate more than his portion. Even when he was fighting that demon, he was eating. They were offering, there was an ekachakra, and they were offering the food to the demon. Every family had to offer like a human being and everything. But he ate the food up before he fought with the demon. He kept the demon away with one hand as he was eating. So that's Bhimsen. So anyway, and Bhimsen was actually a club fighter. Duryodhana was a club fighter too. And he was trained up by Balaram. Balaram was his martial arts guru. So he was a very good club fighter. And also it's described that he would practice utilizing a statue of Bhimsen. And he would just keep hitting that statue. Because Bhimsen, he really wanted to kill Bhimsen. I mean, he made so many plans. Even before he tried to kill the other Pandavas in the House of Lack, he made so many plans to kill Bhimsen, like when they poisoned him. They gave him some poison cake, threw him in the river, and then Bhimsen was saved by the snakes. And the snakes gave him this Rasakund or something like that that made him even stronger. So yeah, I mean, actually, they were most afraid of Bhimsen. Of all the Pandavas, they were most afraid of Bhimsen. So they were really focusing on killing him. So anyway, so Duryodhana picked Bhimsen because he thought, you know, this is the fight I've been waiting for my whole life. He practically wasn't even thinking of winning the battle of Kurukshetra. He was thinking of, this is what I've been waiting for, like hankering to do my whole life, is have this club fight with Bhimsen. So as we know, the story is in club fighting, there's rules, like you don't hit someone below the belt. You just hit like here and up. I mean, just like even in boxing, it's like that. You're not supposed to hit someone below the belt. Now they have this ultimate wrestling where you can do any damn thing. Did you know about this? There's no rules. There's no rule. You used to watch it. Oh, my God. Maybe you can ride in a different car today. So there was this rule. And so they were club fighting for a long period of time. And then neither was winning. But what happened was that Bhimsen kept hitting Duryodhana. And it just bounced off of him. And Bhimsen was wondering, what's happening here? And that's because Duryodhana had become invulnerable on every part of his body except for the midriff. And the reason for that was that his mother made him invulnerable. That was Gandhari, who was such a great ascetic, because she was so chaste to her husband that she wouldn't even have any quality better than her husband, so she bound her eyes because her husband was blind. Dhritarashtra was blind. And so this chastity made her very powerful. That's for all you ladies, that's a hint. So, I mean, there's stories in the Vedic literature about ladies stopping the rising of the sun in the morning by their great chastity. They become very powerful. So don't offend your wife. She's making flower garland. She didn't. I was just addressing him, so. Do whatever your wife says. It's dangerous to disobey. So, So anyway, so the lady became very chaste. So she had a plan to make Duryodhana invulnerable, and she asked Duryodhana to come, as you all know the story, naked to see her, because every part of the body that she would look at, as she finally took away her blindfold, would become invulnerable. But Krishna also was very tricky. He told Duryodhana, as he was on his way to see his mother, and he was naked, he was walking naked. So Krishna said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm going to see my mother." And Krishna said, "What? I mean, I understand when you're like a little baby, your mother sees you naked, but it's not really appropriate at this point. At least wear a little gumsha around your midra." And then Duryodhana, you know, taking Krishna's words as dharma, he said, "All right, yes." And he put this gumsha around, and then as a result, he became invulnerable everywhere else except for the midriff section. This is something like that mythological story of Achilles. Anyone's heard of Achilles? Mm-hmm. Achilles' heel. His mother dipped him in this lake where he would become invulnerable, but you have to hold him by the heel. So that's why that was his Achilles' heel. It's a saying, actually, in English. That's his Achilles' heel. That's a generic saying that means that's the person's vulnerability. Everybody has their Achilles' heel. Even in the cartoons, they have this superheroes, like Superman and Kryptonite. You know about this? How do you know all these things? So anyway, so Duryodhana was vulnerable around the midriff, and so Bhimsen didn't know that, and so he kept hitting Duryodhana, and his body was as strong as steel, and just bing, bing, bing. And Bhimsen was getting really frustrated, you know, what's happening here? And then Krishna, in order to tell him what to do, just kept patting his own thigh. He said, you know, just said, he couldn't tell Bhimsen directly because Balaram was also watching the whole thing. So he wanted, that's why he didn't say hit him in the thigh, because Balaram would have said that's unfair. So anyway, so what he did is he hit Duryodhana in the thigh, and just rubbed both his spine too. Not only the thigh bones, but this Bhagavatam verse describes he broke his spine down there. And that means, you know, death. You know, you break your pelvis, which is around here. You break the pelvis and the spine, and you don't have long to live. So he was writhing in pain after that. And so there were a few people left alive after the battle of Kurukshetra. There was Kripacharya and, of course, Ashwatthama. And Kripacharya and Ashwatthama discovered Duryodhana lying like that, because they just left him there to die. I mean, what else? If you moved him, he would kill him. Because actually, you know, if someone breaks bones or something like that, you don't want to move them. That's a hint for you people who ever see someone break a bone. You just leave them there, you call the emergency medical, because they know how to move people. But if you move someone, you can actually paralyze them. You can hurt them more. So that's why they left him there. Not that they were cruel, thinking, ha-ha, suffer, you know. But they understood that if they moved him, it would kill him quicker. So then what happened is that, you know, Ashwatthama, who's Drona's son, came up. And Ashwatthama was really angry with the Pandavas, because the Pandavas had, by trick, killed his father, Dronacharya. There was that whole story where Yudhisthira Maharaj said to Dronacharya that Ashwatthama is dead. Yudhisthira refused to say it first, because, you know, he had to tell the truth all the time, even though Krishna told him to say it. And then later on he said it regarding an elephant that had been killed by Bhimsen. So anyway, Yudhisthira, it's described from that point forward, always had to touch the ground. Previously, he never touched the ground. But not because he lied, but because he didn't follow Krishna's instruction the first time. And Krishna had to make a trick so he would follow the instruction the second time. So when Krishna says lie, you can lie, but otherwise you should tell the truth. So anyway, so Ashwatthama was really angry how his father had been killed, because what happened was, let's go back, when Drona heard that his son had been killed, Ashwatthama had been killed, which didn't actually happen, Drona just, like, went into meditation. And he said, I can't stand this battle anymore. My dear son had been killed. He was very attached to his son. In fact, that's why he took employment from the Kurus, because he wanted to get his son what his son needed. Like, his son wasn't even drinking milk before. He was so poor. And so Drona went into meditation, and then Dhrishtadyumna came out, and while Drona was in meditation, and cut off Drona's head, which is highly improper. You know, the battlefield, you're not supposed to just cut off someone's head if they're sitting and sleeping or something. So Ashwatthama was extremely angry from that point forward and always wanted revenge against the Pandavas. And of course, when he also saw Duryodhana killed unfairly, he got even angrier at the Pandavas. Because Balaram was also angry at Bhimsain for doing that, but Krishna protected Bhimsain. He stopped Balaram from killing Bhimsain, because Balaram would have killed Bhimsain at that point. And Balaram just walked away frustrated from the whole thing, because his favorite student had been killed unfairly. Anyway, so Ashwatthama, he decided to take revenge. And so there was the camp of the Pandavas. The Pandavas actually weren't in the camp that particular night. So he decided to kill the Pandavas. So the first time he tried to enter the camp, he was stopped. There were actually like big guards in the camp. So he just waited. And then later on, it's described that he performed some sort of sacrifice and became empowered by Lord Shiva. Because he's considered to be some sort of empowered, not incarnation, but empowered personality from the anger of Lord Shiva, Ashwatthama. And so then Ashwatthama went into the camp and he basically slew everybody. Dhrishtadyumna, everybody in the camp while they were sleeping, he slew them. And it's described that there were rakshasas around helping him with the whole thing, and there were vultures eating the bodies. I mean, it was a horrendous sight. And then he saw these five sleeping people, and he thought that they were the Pandavas. And while they were sleeping in bed, he just shot arrows at all of them and killed them all. And he thought, wow, this is great. I've killed the Pandavas, taken revenge. And then he cut their heads off. And he brought them to Duryodhana, who was still writhing there, having his thigh and spinal cord broken. So he brought them to Duryodhana, thinking, wow, this is a prize. And Duryodhana, he wasn't happy because he understood that the continuity of the dynasty was dependent upon these five personalities. And so he was very upset. And being upset, that caused him to leave his body, as being described here. And that wasn't enough, because Ashwatthama, when Krishna informed the Pandavas that Ashwatthama had done such a heinous act, the Pandavas started chasing after Ashwatthama, and they wanted to punish him, and there was this whole conflict. Like Bhimsain, of course, wanted to kill him. Arjuna wanted to kill him, but then Yudhisthira and Draupadi said that he's actually the son of a Brahmin. You're not supposed to kill him, and his mother's depending upon him. So there's this whole conflict. Finally, they decided, instead of killing him, they cut the jewel out of his forehead. But then Ashwatthama was still even more angry, and he fired this Brahmastra at Parikshit, who was within the womb. He wasn't known as Parikshit then, but he was in the womb of his mother, and fired this Brahmastra, and basically Arjuna had to counteract the Brahmastra with his own Brahmastra, and he knew how to withdraw it, and Ashwatthama didn't know how to withdraw his Brahmastra. And so finally, he tried to kill all the Pandavas with the Brahmastra. Then he directed it again towards the Parikshit in the womb. Yeah, that was the story. And then what happened is that Krishna had to protect Parikshit in the womb. So Parikshit is known as Vishnu Ratha. He was protected by Lord Vishnu. And also, Parikshit means the examiner. He was always looking for the same form that he saw within the womb. So this is basically the story. And then Ashwatthama was banished. He was cursed by Vyasadeva to wander for something like 5 or 10,000 years and smell so bad that nobody would go near him. And then after that, he can come back to normal life. Because Ashwatthama had this benediction of being Chiranjeev, I mean, living a very long life. He couldn't be killed, actually. So he's still around now. But I think he doesn't smell so bad anymore. But anyway, so that's basically the whole story that's being related here. Now, let's see. We'll just comment on what Srila Prabhupada said in his purport about Krishna. Prabhupada said, Lord Chaitanya desired that all who were born in India and Fiji I mean, Fiji's like little India, right? Prabhupada didn't say that, but I'm just extrapolating because, I mean, all those of Indian extraction have a great responsibility to preach Krishna Katha. I was just reading this morning about how Sanskrit is actually understood to be the source of all the other languages on the Earth planet, and it's quite a sophisticated language. I mean, there's these words that we use in English, many of the words we use in English, and other, and of course, what to speak Hindi, come from Sanskrit. But India, for one reason or other, India has lost a lot of its culture because of the lack of people using Sanskrit anymore, and actually the English language. The English language is actually robbed, or the widespread use of the English language under the British has actually robbed India of a lot of its traditional culture. So anyway, so people in India are naturally Krishna conscious. I mean, just like it's right below the surface. Even in Fiji, there's some remnant of Indian culture there. They're naturally Krishna conscious. Like Prabhupada said, he said about the people from India, he said, they are pretending to be asleep. He said, the Westerners, they're actually asleep. And it's interesting that Prabhupada said it's more difficult to wake up someone who's pretending to be asleep than someone who's asleep. Therefore, Prabhupada had to come to the West and preach, because in India, you know, maybe he had one disciple who really didn't do anything for him. And the Westerners, they became very enthusiastic to serve Srila Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada brought the Westerners to India to wake up the Indians, or to jolt them. Because they were pretending to be asleep. In India, people are pretending to be asleep because they think Western style of life and technology and everything is just like the goal. So when Prabhupada brought the Westerners in, who had already experienced the amenities in the West, they said, wow, if that's the goal, and these people are taking up Krishna consciousness, I better stop pretending to be asleep. So we find in many cases that the Western body devotees are very effective, and sometimes more effective than the Indian preachers, because it impresses people. It impresses people. Wow, he's from the West, you know, and he took up Krishna consciousness. He was never exposed to it when he was a child. His parents never forced him to do it, so somehow or other, there must be something in it. So that was actually Prabhupada's strategy. But Prabhupada said, once people are woken up, there's another statement here. The Prabhupada says, after full realization, preach the transcendental message. So you may all say, you don't have full realization. But we were talking about this last night in the class. Full realization doesn't mean that you actually see Krishna face to face in this particular context. It means you have full faith in Srila Prabhupada and the Vedic literatures. So someone who has full faith in the Prabhupada in the Vedic literatures may not have fully realized everything in the Vedic literatures, but in one sense they have full realization. So their duty is to preach to everyone. And of course there's that famous verse, those who are born in the land of Bhartavarsha have as their duty to para upakar, to work for the benefit of everyone else. And, you know, yare de gatari gar krishna padesh, mari gai guru hoi tori desh. You should take it as your responsibility. And that's why Krishna's also arranged for so many people from India to move to the Western world, so that they can take as their responsibility to preach also to the Westerners. In our movement is not meant simply to preach to the people from India. That may come as a shock. But but we're meant to preach to everybody, because it's off the bodily platform. I mean, if you go into any Hindu center, I mean, 99.99% of the people are not only from India, but from a particular part of India. Usually, like if you go into the Sikh temple, you know, they're usually from Punjab, you know, Chandigarh or some place like that. And if you go to the Swami Narayan temple, usually from Gujarat, right? And if you go into Venkateshwara temple, they're usually from South India. So, but Krishna consciousness is actually, Prabhupada said, the United Nations for the spiritual world, because we have people from all parts of India and all parts of the world. And especially here in New Zealand, you see it's very nice. You have Chinese people, a few Kiwis, and you know, all sorts of people. There's devotees here from Poland. There's devotees. I mean, it's really amazing how it's really a multicultural experience to join the Krishna consciousness movement. And so, but it's specifically the responsibility of people born in India to help propagate this movement in different ways. You know, giving donations to the society, helping worship the deities, preaching. All these things are a great responsibility, because when you're given that birth, there's great responsibility that goes along with that birth. You understand? Not simply sitting back and enjoying Krishna consciousness. I mean, of course, anyone who's taken initiation has a responsibility to propagate good, but especially those who are born in India or of Indian extraction, PIOs. You know what a PIO is? Person of Indian origin. That's a legal designation. Or OCIs, Overseas Indians. Those are two designations people get. Or ABCDs, Australian Born Confused Deshis. NBCDs, New Zealand Born Confused Deshis. Or American Born Confused Deshis. Did you ever hear that expression before, ABCDs? That's quite common in America and in Australia. That when you have the children and they're born in that particular country, they're confused. You know, what is my identity? Am I a Kiwi? Or am I a Deshi? You understand? Especially people first generation from India. It's very confusing. So therefore the children have to be brought up in such a way that they're taught about their culture. Because otherwise they'll go to school and through social pressure they'll be accepting a foreign culture. You know, the parents' responsibility is to make sure that the children accept their culture, Indian culture, or Vedic culture, as the case may be. Otherwise they're committing violence. They're actually not even taking care of their children, what to speak of taking care of their responsibility to preach to others. Okay, so any questions or comments about any of these points? Questions, comments, arguments? Indian birth is superior to Western birth. It's not that I'm a racist, I mean, I'm born in the West. But it's superior because the body is meant for self-realization. I mean, even racially, there's different bodies that are more productive or helpful towards self-realization. Like people from India need to sleep less than Westerners, unless they just eat any junk food, then they need to sleep more. But like when Prabhupada was in the Gita, he says anyone who sleeps more than 6 hours is definitely in the mode of ignorance. And because Prabhupada's experience was from people from India. But the Westerners, sometimes they need to sleep more, especially if they're driving a car. But I've seen people from India get by in like 3 hours of sleep every night for a year or two. I mean, it's just amazing. If I did that, you know, I'd be sneezing my head off. I mean, I couldn't do it. I mean, obviously, it'd be too much. So the body is actually very good for self-realization. It's meant for austerities. It's not meant for sense gratification. And if people from India use their body for sense gratification, they get more of a reaction than the people from the West. There's more diabetes, heart disease, and other diseases that come when people from India engage in sense gratification. Because the body is made for a specific thing. It's like you have a machine that's made for a certain thing, right? Like if you get a race car and you try to just drive it in the normal street, it may not be so good for the transmission. Right? Yeah, the race cars. It's interesting, the race cars. Anyone been to a drag race ever? the drag races, they're only meant for going fast. So sometimes they have to push the car to get it started or something like that. So if they try to drive on the street with a drag race, remember the drag racers?
Yeah.
Those are anyway, the cars just go one direction. Not the stock car races or anything. And so you have to use your body for that which it's meant for. So people from India, their body is meant to engage in austerities. I mean, look what Hiranyakashipu did. I mean, he wasn't born in New Zealand. You know, he's born in India. I mean, obviously. And therefore, he could execute the austerities. So, you know, the Western bodies are like more inclined towards sense gratification. But it's interesting, in India, they're just trying to imitate the West, which doesn't work. The bodies are just not meant it for sense gratification. So it's not, I'm not saying that if you have a Western body, you should engage in sense gratification. But just also understand the limitations of each particular type of body. I mean, there are differences in bodies, isn't it? I mean, I've experienced that. So, anyway, most of you are Indian extraction, so you should engage in austerities. You don't have to do that. You just work as a taxi driver. That's austere. Not austere, you can preach to people. There was one article in the magazine, Back to Godhead, many years ago. The article was entitled Taxi Tatwa. Anyone ever read that magazine? That article? It was about a devotee in New York who drove a taxi, one of my god brothers. And he was preaching. He had like Krishna pictures and things like that. And he was preaching, distributing prasad. It was nice. It was nice. Don't worry. So anyway, so that's the point. Yeah.
This is the origin of language. I've used a Sanskrit origin for me. Did it come from higher?
Yeah. Well, it's the demigods speak Sanskrit, and also the spiritual world. And I was just reading. There's like 72 endings for each verb in Sanskrit, depending on, you know, the tense or and then what other words you use it with, whether it has to agree with the nouns. I mean, it's really complex. 72, something like 72 endings for each verb. You got to have a brain like a computer to learn Sanskrit. I mean, I can't even imagine how it is. You know, you have all these different genders and then tenses. You know, there's so many, I forget how many tenses there are in Sanskrit, but quite a few. So it really takes a brilliant person like Prabhupada or other devotees. Some of the devotees in the movement are brilliant enough to know Sanskrit. It's considered the mother of all tongues. And you have, you know, different words. Like a vritti in Sanskrit means to turn. And in English you have subvert, invert, pervert, revert. You know, that comes from that. I mean, there's so many words that come from the original Sanskrit words. So any other questions or comments? Yeah.
Maharaj, you mentioned something about Eka Chakra. You took us there with
you. Yeah, Eka Chakra is where Lord Nityananda was born or appeared. And that's also where the Pandavas resided when they were in exile after the burning of the House of Black, and they escaped from that. That was the first place they were acting as Brahmins. They were staying in the house of a Brahmin. Anyway, you all know that story in this village, they had to give a person, like each month, to this demon. What was the demon's name? Vakasura, or something like that. Vakasura, I think was the name. And they had to give a person every month. And so it came time for that family to give a person. And so when it came time for that family, everyone was crying. I mean, the story of the Mahabharata. The father was saying, I'm going to go. The mother was saying, no, I want to go. Their older daughter said, I want to go. And their little kid said, I want to go. And when the Pandavas heard this, when Kunti Devi heard this, she said, actually, we're guests in your house. I should give one of my sons. I give Bhimsen. And they said, no, this is not proper etiquette for us to take a guest and allow a guest to be killed. And so she said, there's no problem, my son knows some mantras, which is half true, not really true. It's not that Bhimsen knew so many mantras, but she understood nobody could kill Bhimsen, and Bhimsen was actually quite enthusiastic too. When the other Pandavas came home, they found Bhimsen going like this, and they asked their mother, you know, what's he doing? You know, why is he so enthusiastic today? And she revealed to them what she had promised this Brahmin family, and they said, you shouldn't sacrifice him. And she said, no problem. This is sporting activity for him. So anyway, so he killed the demon. But first he ate all the demon's food before he killed the demon. And that enraged the demon further, and he took the horns from this demon, because the demon had two horns on his head, and killed the demon by putting the horns into the demon. He did took the demon's horns out of his hand. And that's it. That was a nice story. It's all Mahabharata stories. That I think everyone's familiar with these stories. I mean, you've usually been brought up with the Mahabharata since you've been born. Any other questions or comments? Yeah.
Because of that one lie or disobeying Krishna, is it the reason why you still had to visit the hellish planet for?
Yes. Yes, and that's why he never touched. He always touched the ground after that point. Before that, he was like a demigod. He never actually touched the ground. And his chariot never even touched the ground. So, but it's not because he lied, it's because he disobeyed Krishna. The impersonalists say, or the demons say, it's because he lied. We say because he disobeyed Krishna. You know, if you disobey Krishna, then not a good idea. I don't highly recommend it. All right, any other questions or comments about any of these points? It's an interesting story from the Mahabharata. And the Bhagavatam tells the story too.
So, the
full version, the Ganguly. Not the ISKCON version, because it's too abbreviated. It's too short. It doesn't really have all these stories. The Ganguly translate, it's a very accurate translation. Although there's about 85 different Sanskrit versions of the Mahabharata. So we don't take the Mahabharata stories with the same authenticity as we do the Bhagavatam stories, because the Mahabharata has never been passed down through an unbroken chain of disciplic succession. Shripad Madhvacharya says that the Mahabharata has been changed dramatically. So, but as far as the English versions, if someone wants to read, I mean, they're really thick, like three thick volumes. The Ganguly version, and you can probably get it in India. Like that. Pretty thick versions of the Mahabharata. I think I even have it as an e-file on my computer.
There's audio version.
Of the whole Mahabharata? No, I don't think the whole Mahabharata. It's just the abbreviated versions of the Mahabharata. Because it's very lengthy. It's very lengthy. And, I have an audio version of the Mahabharata, but it's not the whole thing. So I've read the whole thing. Ganguly, you can remember it, Ganguly.
That's the author's name.
That's the translator's name.
Oh. Like Maharashtra, I think, Bombay.
Yeah. I don't know where he's from, but he translated it. He translated the Mahabharata in English. So that's the most complete edition available in English, in the English language. Unless you can read it in Sanskrit. Does anybody here read Sanskrit? It's very difficult. And it's written in ancient Sanskrit too, which is different than modern Sanskrit. Okay, so then we'll end. We got a big day. We got initiation karma and all sorts of things. We have a program in the temple. We have a program, breakfast, dinner, another day of running around. Who's driving today? Oh, good. That's good. You know how to drive.